thank you so much for joining Hashtag No Limits. I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is no better example, or more beautiful example even, than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. For those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly. And that's not enough. It then has to struggle in order to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. And I just recently read, actually, it was a gift that my daughter gave me for Mother's Day. And it said, just when the caterpillar thought its world was over, it turned into the butterfly. And I just found that really beautiful. And so I was really thankful for that gift. And while none of those things can be easy to bust through, neither is busting through those limits that we ourselves or society place upon ourselves. And I'm excited today to bring you Ryan Skinner from Cracking the Code. Ryan, how are you today? And welcome.
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. It's a beautiful day here in Southern Illinois. How about the weather where you are?
Illinois, I'm going to Chicago next month.
I am nowhere near Chicago.
Yeah, I know. I always assume everything's like Boston, whatever. It's as right. And it's funny. I dated a girl from Chicago for a number of years, and I forget how far off things are there. It's
yeah,
no better. But yeah, the weather's great here. It's a good time of year, and it's just a nice time to be able to be outside and experience stuff.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So just a couple of housekeeping things really quickly. If you are watching, give us a hashtag live and tell us where you're watching from. And if it's replay, give us a hashtag replay and where you're watching. If you have any questions or comments for Ryan or myself during this episode, please pop them into the chat and I will be able to show them to Ryan. If you happen to watch in the replay and you have a question, do the same thing and I will get the alert and I will make sure that Ryan sees any questions or comments that you have as well. So I think that takes care of that sort of the business. Oh, and I always forget, make sure you like and subscribe to this channel so that you don't miss any of my wonderful guests that I have. Ryan, as you can see at the bottom, is episode 169, and he is just the 169th amazing person that I have had. And so there's 168 other episodes with amazing people, entrepreneurs, objects, businesses. They're all great. I'm a little biased, but I still think they're all great. So Ryan, tell us what brings you on today.
So I have a business called Cracking the Code, which is a coaching business. And I got into it because, you know, I always would say, if you ever look at those number locks, most people can get one or two locks on a good day. If you're really somebody who's a high achiever, and by high achiever, I don't just mean monetarily. I mean a good parent, you know, somebody who's a good role model. You might hit that third number, but very rarely do people get to that fourth number. And due to the fact that, you know, I had to go through my own experience, my own, conversion, basically. You know, that's why it's funny. I have a friend of mine who has a butterfly tattoo on her with a cocoon. I laugh because I remember thinking, what is that all about? And then I realized that a lot of us, to become who we're supposed to be, we have to go through some pain. I mean, you know, the pain, the same fire that molds steel, you know, breaks glass. Mm-hmm. And I have found it to be true that, you know, when you go through those things, there's a certain thing that you, certain experience you get, certain traits that come into you. And for me, it was a lot of it was grit, tenacity, dedication, discipline. And when I learned those things, I realized it was easy to get to that fourth, you know, that fourth number on the lock, so to speak. And then my goal was to share with other people. At first, I just shared it. You know, I didn't do it as a business. I just helped people out, other people in the financial industry, guys that hadn't even had to go through the same adversity. And then I realized, geez, if I can do this, anybody can do this.
Yeah. It's so wonderful when we get a little further down the road. Two things kind of happen. We think, oh, you know, A, maybe nobody needs to know what I knew. Maybe they already knew it and it just took me longer to get there. Or we say, you know what? I can help people who aren't quite as far down the road get to where I am. In all those aspects that you talked about, parenting, business, social life. And so it's wonderful when we take that opportunity and say, I've got something to share and I'm going to share it. So thank you for doing that. So when I was reading some information about you, it said that when you were in, I think, seventh grade, you were given an assignment. Can you tell me about that assignment?
Yeah, so a teacher of mine noticed I didn't read well. I had some learning disabilities, some struggles. She also noticed I was a freak with numbers. So my whole life I've been gifted with numbers. And she gave me an assignment. She said, Ryan, I'm going to give you a subscription to Investor's Business Daily. I'm going to give you some time to pick $50,000 of fake money, some time to pick some stocks. I want you to pick stocks that you understand. So I picked Chrysler because not only did they make cars, but they had the highest ratio of companies that bought their parts for repairs. I bought Nike, Coca-Cola, Gator, anything Michael Jordan went near. And I still, just by being a kid and picking what a kid would know, I beat the market. And right then and there, I realized something, like I had a knack for that. And that was the gift. I mean, and that's been what's got me this far. Even when I've gone through adversities, that talent has pulled me out the other side of it. It's the stuff you learn when you're becoming like who you're supposed to be while having a talent that you start saying, geez, like there's so much more to this.
Yeah. And I love that so much because you said you had struggles with reading, but yet you were amazing at math. And I find that a lot of my guests, kind of the area where I focus on the idea of hashtag no limits is people who I find are eligible or have been eligible for special education at some point in their life, or maybe could have been, but weren't ever found eligible. And oftentimes there are limits placed upon them because of other people's thinking of their abilities. And so I'm so thankful that you had a teacher who recognized, well, reading might be a struggle, but math is really a strong suit, and really guided you through your strengths to improve, because I'm sure you had to do some reading in order to understand all of the, you know, how the stocks were working as well as the numbers. And those are the more important thing, but I bet your reading improved a little bit as well because of all of what you had to do, because you were interested in it.
Yeah. It's funny. I love to read today, but I still read probably like an eighth grade level. Like my 12-year-old stepdaughter reads faster than I do. But you know, you talk about you saying how you were grateful for that teacher. Nobody's more grateful than me. I'll tell you. My life. I went back to her in my early 30s. I said, what can I do? I'll get you a house, a car. And she said, no, just watch. She goes, you do a lot with charity. I watched how you pay it forward. I watched how you overcame some challenges in your life. She said, Ryan, now that's all the gift I need. And it's funny, I never knew at a young age, my mother wouldn't even let me know that I had some challenges like that. But I look now, I remember a fifth grade teacher saying to my mother, it'd be a gift if you can get him through high school. My mother said, oh, he'll get through high school, he'll go through college. And now I have a daughter who's 4 with special needs and has autism. And I look at it like, you know, we just got to find the gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's sad that you mentioned that about the fifth grade teacher, but I think there are a lot of people out there, and that's the idea for the show is, you know, it's that mental limit of, oh, this child will never whatever. And I don't feel like we can do that or should do that, because we don't know what kind of medical breakthroughs, scientific breakthroughs, innovations and inventions or miracles might happen in somebody's life. And like you mentioned before, the grit and the tenacity. I have a student that, when he was in second grade or whatever, he was being said, you know, told, oh, you'll never go to college. It'll never happen. Well, he just graduated from college a couple of years ago. And, you know, to just have that belief in yourself. He constantly thanks me for being one of the first people to believe in him outside of his mom. And it was so easy for me because I saw his potential. And it makes me sad to hear that there are teachers, you know, like ones that I worked with, like ones that you experienced, but also very happy to hear that there are, I hope, more teachers believing in those individual students who are struggling in different areas.
So yeah, I think it's all what you come across too.
I'm sorry, say that again.
A lot of it's what you come across as a teacher. I think back then everything was so cookie cutter, and it was either you were or you weren't. College wasn't as prevalent. I think now people say, hey, you know what? I always look at the Edison, you know, Thomas Edison. I don't know if you ever heard the story about how his mother, he was given a note from the school, and they said, don't open it, bring it home to your mother. So his mother was reading, her eyes filled up, she was crying, and he said, Mom, what is it saying? She said, your son is such a genius. There's nobody here capable of teaching him. Please teach him at home. When she died, he was cleaning out her place. And when he cleaned out her place, he found the note. It said, your son is basically deficient, mentally deficient. We can't help him here. Please teach him at home. But at that point, he was already a genius. And he wrote in his journal that day, Thomas Edison was the greatest genius, was a genius the world had known because he had the mother's love. And that's true. Like, you need somebody's love and somebody's compassion.
Wow. No, I had never heard that story. I always think of the one that I've never 100% researched this, but researched the person who said this to me, that he had tried over either 500 or 1,000 different materials to be the filament for the light bulb. And he never looked at any of them as a failure, just as, well, that one doesn't work. Lesson learned. And he moved on.
Yeah. And when his factory went up in flames and he didn't have insurance, he went to his kids. He said, go get your mother. She's never going to see a fire like this again. He just had that attitude, like, you know, and I think that's just it. I think when you think outside the box without limits, it's very easy. There's so many ways to get to where you want to go in life. And so many people think that it's just a one-way track and you're this way, you're not. And that's a sad part, because what we're learning is the most successful people in this world weren't cookie cutter people.
Right. So many of our quote unquote successful or famous people are people who learn differently than the typical person. I used to have my students do that when they would first come to me with their eligibility for special education. I'd say your assignment, if they were with me for writing or reading, was to find some famous or known person that has what you have, that has that same eligibility, because to give them that, like, there is someone out there who is very successful, even if it was just one person, but more often than not, they found so many people, then they were like, well, which one do I choose?
It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I liked what you said at the beginning about the cracking the code. It made me think about those rooms that are so popular now, those escape rooms, and how you have to solve all these different puzzles. And the one room that I was in, I didn't even listen to any of the clues. I just went and sat down at a lock, like you were talking about. And I just kept doing the numbers. And I did. I had two of them before they came to me with the clue that applied to the lock I was in. And then because of the clue, I was able to get the team of people were able to get the other three numbers. But yeah, I thought that was really relevant that, you know, people have an idea now of what escape rooms are for sure. And cracking the code. So what is this code that we're all cracking?
I think the code's an individual thing. I mean, for some people, the code is, for me, the code right now is to be a father, to be a business owner, help people manage your retirement money, to help people that I know they're struggling with certain personal problems, to get over the other side of that. That's the code for me. Now, at one point in my life, the code was just to stay sober, just not to use drugs. Another point was to learn how to function in school without reading well. So the code can be a day-to-day thing. I think it evolves with us. But there's one thing that inside, the certain characteristics that everybody has, and each person has their own unique characteristics, but there's something inside each person that once you crack that, you realize, hey, I've got this. For me, it was grit and the ability to just deal with pain and push through. Once I realized I had that, I was like, I can do whatever I want because I'll push through so I get it. And that's really the big thing. And I think so for different people, it's a different code, but once you find it for that person, it's unstoppable.
How do you go about finding that for that person?
Spend time, get to know them. Ask a bunch of questions. Honest to God. People say, how much time do you spend with the people you coach? And I'm like, well, some people it's an hour. Some people it's 10, 20, 100 hours. But I'm not going to allow them to pay me until we get to what they need to get to. And if we don't get there, and there are times where, you know, I say to people, listen, I'm not the right coach for you. We got to get you somebody else. But we point them in the right direction. But you make sure that they don't leave empty handed. You make sure they crack their code, whether it's us or somebody else.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that when businesses are able to say, this is more than I can do. Or this is a different way I can't get there. So let me recommend someone else to you, because I think we need to do that business to business recommending and understand that we've hit our plateau for that person and be okay with that and be able to accept that.
Yeah. I mean, I get people referred to me with serious drug addiction that they're still actively addicts and they want to learn how to launch a business or how to tap into some part of them, but they're not even dialed in or clean enough that they can do that. And I'm not a recovery coach. So I'll bring in a guy and, I'll say, hey, this guy's name's Rob, and Rob's going to be able to get you there. Once he gets you where you need to be, then we're going to start working together.
That's very cool. And so do you mind talking about your addiction and kind of what that did to your life and how you were able to get out of that and turn your life into a different path again?
Yeah, no, I don't mind at all. I think in the blessing, comes from the curse, you know, kind of like the same thing with the butterfly. When I was going through it, you know, as a guy who grew up, there wasn't drugs in my family. You know, I didn't have aunts, uncles. Like, it wasn't prevalent. But, you know, I fell through it due to medical stuff. I got into opioids and it did what they were supposed to do. Next thing you know, you're a heroin addict and you're an intravenous drug user. And you're thinking to yourself, how did this happen? This wasn't supposed to be me. And I owned a financial firm before that. And I thought to myself, how did this happen? Through the grace of God and some good people around here. You know, where I'm located, it's a good area. If you have an opioid addiction, there's a lot of people there, a lot of help available. And I got the help through some good people, and the courts around here centered around recovery, not just like punishment, and came out the other side of it. And then once I came out the other side, I realized, like, hold on, there's something here. There's a blessing that came out of this. And for me, it was spirituality. It was now not just chasing money or stature or some BS thing. It was about, who am I? Like, who am I trying to be? What role do I play here? How can I make other people's lives better? Sometimes my job, sometimes just being somewhere.
Yeah. So when I had a question and I think it's escaped my brain. I apologize that happens sometimes to me. So when you were, oh, I know what it was. When you were on the opioids, I think a lot of people, one of the limits that they place on those who are addicted to drugs is, you know, that they did it by choice, that they, you know, they, a lot of times I think people feel that it's somebody who was down and out or somebody who just, you know, they couldn't handle the stress or the pressure. And so they turned to drugs. And can you elaborate a little bit more? You said it, you know, like not on your specific story maybe, but maybe like the statistics of, if there are any, like how many people turn to drugs because, or not turn to, but get addicted to because of,
well, I think it's medical issue. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it's medical issue, but I do believe that there's some ism in people that find life overwhelming. I think there's a common denominator in most addicts and alcoholics that we get overwhelmed by a lot. You know, we're very sensitive people. Like we're usually the life of the party, good people to be around until we're not, until it goes too far. And then suddenly we're off the grid. So for me, it was, okay, I get overwhelmed really easy. I get very, like, over, you know, financial insecurity, emotional insecurity. You know, a lot of things rattle me. So until I got those things dealt with, I couldn't stay sober, okay? But the thing is, so drugs and alcohol were a solution for me. They weren't a problem. When they came around, finally, I felt – it was one time I felt right. I remember when I first did an opioid feeling, you know what, this is what life's supposed to feel like. All those anxieties, the fears, the doubts, all that's gone. I'm okay with being me. And I hated being me. I didn't know it at the time. At the time, I thought, oh, I'm good. But then when I really took a look back at it, I said, geez, I want to be anything but me. So that was where it started for me. And then once I kind of came out the other side of it, I'll tell you, you always picture a drug addict, some guy who grows up in a crack house and shooting drugs under a bridge. But now for me, I was a financial advisor making $500,000 a year. I owned a couple houses, a couple cars. On the outside, it looked good. And it went and it went and it went. And then when I finally had no money, that's when you turn to heroin, is when, you know, or fentanyl nowadays, when you can't afford to buy the pills anymore, when the pills aren't available, then it's now what? And that's scary.
Right. Yeah. And so what do you do when you hit that now what? What are some options?
Well, I wish I had known the options at a younger age. For me, I didn't. And I kind of knew of, like, you know, 12-step work, like different programs of recovery. I didn't realize that they worked, or I thought they worked for other people. I wasn't willing to give up drinking. I'd say, oh, I can't drink. Come on. Like, it wasn't until I realized, like, it's complete abstinence or you're going to suffer a lot longer. For me, it was going to a jail cell for a couple of months. A friend of mine was chief of probation. I walked into his courthouse. I said, you're not going to screw me. He said, screw you. He said, you've been on probation for years drinking and getting in fist fights. And he said, I'm holding you, buddy. And I remember, like, all right. And I remember thinking this could be a start, because I knew guys had gone to jail for a couple months, dried out, and they got into recovery. And I kept thinking, maybe this is my chance. But when you start, oh, you're at the bottom, you're broke, you're poor, and you have no hope. That's why the one day at a time comes in. Like, you can't see more than one day, because all you're trying to do is get through that one day without one drink and one drug and hurting one person emotionally. I had hurt everybody in my life. And then over time, you start lapping some time together, and you realize, geez, you know, I got a lot of talents that I never used, because I was so busy burying my fears and insecurities with drugs and alcohol. And that's where spirituality comes in. You have to believe in something greater than yourself. Now, I remember Robert Downey Jr. said when he was getting an award that Mel Gibson told him, you have to hug the cactus, the prickly part of yourself you don't like. And it's true. You have to look at the things you don't like and say, all right, you know what? That's part of me too, and I'm going to deal with that. And over time, you just start to learn how to live more, and your talents come out the longer you're sober. And through the grace of God, you know, you can have a really good life. I mean, my business is far better now than it ever did before I got sober. And more importantly, my relationships are tremendous.
That's wonderful. And I have known some people who have been addicted to drugs and they have stopped, or addicted to alcohol or whatever. But it's that every day. Like, I mean, I'm not a coach of recovery or anything, but I think that making the decision to stop is easier than continuing to stay sober. Would you agree with that?
Ah, God. I've struggled with both the times in my life. I actually think making the decision is the hardest part, because that's when you get sick. If you're actively using, I think you got to go to treatment. And then you got to give up, and you think you got to put your life on hold. What if I lose business? What if I lose this? You have to understand it all has to go on the back burner. I have to be sober, or else nothing else matters. If you have legal issues, you go into the courts, you're lying to the courts, you're faking urines and drug tests, and you have to get honest. If I had ever gone to a court and said, hey, I'm a drug addict, I can't stop, guys, and I know I'm on probation, but I just can't stop using, they wouldn't have put me in jail. They would have got me treatment. but I kept ducking and dodging, giving them a hard time. So they had to teach me a lesson. And so I think the hardest part, now staying stopped is hard, because once what happens is a lot of it, it's a mind screw kind of. You start thinking, feeling better, you look normal, you start thinking you're normal. And oftentimes people go out and that's how it happens. They have a drink. Or I remember one time I had some surgery and I was on the opioids, and I remember thinking, I'm going to go off the deep end. And luckily I had good people in my life I could call and be honest with. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people that don't, and or aren't that open with people in their circle. And those people, they pay a heavy price.
Yeah. I thought it's harder to stay sober, because the decision, once you finally come to it, is a like a second long, you know, okay, I'm going to do this. And then but then it's that every day, every minute, every second of every day for the rest of your life. If I understand most people correctly, that it's, you know, so that's where I was kind of thinking it's harder to stay sober than to make
the action.
But
No, you're right. The action. It takes action. And it's an ongoing action. There are times in my recovery I've been really involved in this time. I've been on the sidelines. And it's one of those things, if you don't take daily action, it's a daily reprieve. It's not one of those things. So in that sense, you're absolutely right. But the hardest thing is making the decision, really deciding, and then taking action, like going somewhere and getting help. Because that's when you're like, all right, I'm all done. It's an ongoing process. It's one of those things, you can never rest on your laurels. It doesn't matter. You know, addiction's not – the disease isn't impressed by how many years you got clean and this and that. And so that's where it's hard.
Yeah. I keep getting great questions, and then I listen to you some more, and then I forget what I was going to say. I don't know. I can't – it's not coming back to me. So hopefully as we continue our discussion, it'll come back to me. I think that addiction is just one of those things that, unless you've lived through it, you probably really can't totally understand it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I remember thinking – I remember guys I knew that would sell drugs, sold pills. Now, I was never a drug dealer. I was never even ran with those guys. There were some older guys. There were some tough guys that I kind of looked up to for the wrong reasons. I remember a guy trading a Rolex off his wrist for one pill. He was so sick. I remember thinking, this guy's weak. This guy's really weak. Now, knowing what I know, he was just sick. I remember trading at the end. I traded a TV off my wall for one bag of dope, a $30 bag of dope, and I got to get a TV off my wall. That'll tell you that, you know, the decision's long gone by that point. And people look at it as weakness, it's disgusting, this, that. And I get it. Because if you're on the other side, you are looking, it is weak. It does look weak, and it does look gross, and all those things that you hate to see in a human being. But it's, without a doubt, a disease. I'm pretty disciplined. I can be able to, I'll tell you, 7-figure business, no problem in my sleep. I can stay in shape pretty easy. I go to the gym. I have discipline around what I eat. And the one thing I'm not disciplined around was that. It was one area. It was either all or nothing.
Yeah. And I remember the question was, so when you're out in social gatherings, in the area where I live, beer is very prevalent. And people, you know, like almost if you don't drink beer, you're the odd person. And I've seen some posts about similar types of consequences or concepts where you're out and somebody offers you alcohol and you say no. And then they're like, oh, come on, you know, you want it. Like, it's like there's peer pressure to have alcohol. And is that something, how do you deal with that?
I'm pretty lucky. If people are around me enough, owning my own business, I don't have to be around people if I don't choose to, which is nice. The guys I do business with in my back office, they've been tremendously supportive. And also my primary drug of choice wasn't alcohol. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was an alcoholic by no question. But there's not too many places you go to at a restaurant, they offer you a needle full of heroin or pills to snort. Right. You know what I mean? And I'm very lucky, because I always wonder if alcohol was the only thing I did, you know, those were the final convinces. But if alcohol was it, I wonder what it would be like. So I don't mind going to a restaurant. I don't mind if I'm dating people that have drink or I'm around people who drink. I don't stay until 2 a.m. at bars. I mean, I'm not stupid. I know that if you go to the barbershop enough, you're going to get a haircut. But if I'm there for business, or if I'm on a date and somebody's having a drink or something practical, I'm all for it. If it doesn't make sense, or if somebody's getting tying one on, I don't need to be around it. So it's about protecting yourself. It's about having self-confidence. I mean, at the end of the day, you have an obligation to yourself to protect yourself and make sure you're happy. So I make sure that, you know, my kids are safe. You know, I have an obligation to that. I have an obligation to my parents, my clients. So there's a lot that I'm protecting here. I've got a really good life today. And one drink, one drug would screw it all up.
Yeah. And is it, I feel like someone told me one time that like the advertising for alcohol, not so much drugs, but I mean, now with, you know, like CBD and those types of things that are out there, is there like, does the alcohol, I'm sorry, the advertising trigger you sometimes too, like to want to go get?
I hear that with alcohol and the CBD, the marijuana. For me, like, I'm going to be honest like with you. If I'm doing drugs, I'm not doing kiddie play. Like, I go hard. Like, I was a hardcore junk box at the end.
Right.
So, for me, thank God that it doesn't – I look at alcohol like it'll lead me back to opioids, or it'll lead me to homelessness and hell, to be honest with you. If it wasn't that, I probably wouldn't be as strong around it. If I didn't have a daughter who's four – honestly, before I had kids – it was a lot easier. I think it would have been easy to go back out. Having a four-year-old who has autism and has some challenges, like, I owe it to her. There aren't many things I'm committed to, you know, but there are very few things I have an obligation to, and that's the only thing.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about her? Like, is she in school? What sort of limits have already been placed upon her that, you know, like when you've had her out in public or around your own family even?
Yeah. So we don't, you know, her mom and I are pretty good about not having limits around. You know, she's a rock star. She was in 40 hours a week of therapy before she was even in school because of the autism. Her mom got her everything from ABA therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, food therapy, because she wasn't eating enough. And and now we have her in a private school for kids with autism out here, which is great. I mean, if you make the money to do it, but 10, 12 years ago, I could have done that. I mean, I'm very fortunate that I can do it. The owner of the school is tremendous. They don't believe in limitations. She has some delays, developmental delays, cognitive stuff. They think it's just going to tie to ADHD and some other dyslexia stuff like I had. And they think she'll be able to pull it all together. She said, I think she'll overcome the autism because she's extremely social. She's learning. She's talking a lot now. So I just don't believe in delays. I wouldn't, you know, it's funny when people hear she has autism, they always tell dad, I wouldn't change it. She's great. And, as long as me and her mom, one of us are alive, we'll figure the rest out, you know?
Yeah. And I appreciate that you just said that, you know, that when people hear she has autism, they're, oh, you know, and that's that mental limit, you know, that they're like, oh, she's only going to whatever their thoughts go to.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the most part, people are just mean, you know, listen, people mean to be kind. They don't mean to be rude. Every so often somebody will say something. I'm like, you know, I won't use the terms I use, but I'll say, like, she's not whatever. And like, and by whatever I might say, she's not like, you know, some sort of an animal, you know, like she's a human being. Right. She just converses differently. When she plays with little kids, she does well. My niece and nephew, they're normal kids, regular kids. And she plays fine with them. And she's just a kid with just different path to expressing herself, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And that was on top of giving those kids those assignments of find some, you know, famous person who has the same disability as yours, is explaining that, you know, about 80% of the population takes that point A to point C and they go right through point B. It's a straight shot and they're all good. But then there are other people who they have to do A and then they'll jump to C and then they might come back to B, or, you know, they just take a different route to get there, but they still get there eventually. And you know, that doesn't mean that that's wrong. It's bad. It just means it's different, and different is okay. That's what makes our world so wonderful, is because of all the differences. Like you said, all the people that, you know, have come up with all the different, successes in the world, a lot of them learn differently from your quote unquote typical person.
Yeah. I mean, look at Elon Musk, you know, I mean, right. The perfect example. Like, I mean, that guy is anything but normal, quote unquote, but he's unbelievable. He's a rock star.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always forget his name, but the gentleman who owns Virgin Atlantic. And I mean, there's so many celebrities that we know that, and like I said, famous people of whatever, be it sports or politics or whatever, that they have ADHD or dyslexia or whatever. You know, like I said, they just have that difference in them, and that's all good. And it's not something that when you hear that someone has, you go, oh, you know, it's, I mean, I feel like if someone tells you they have cancer,
that
to me is different, you know, yeah. Like, oh yeah, that's really going to have a bad outcome more than likely. But to hear that someone has autism or dyslexia or whatever, to me, that's different. Go ahead. I thought you were going to say something.
No, I think it's different from a teacher's perspective. You get it because you're a teacher. I think a lot of times people that don't get it, they mean well. They, you know, I've had family relatives that mean well and say, oh, geez, I'm so sorry. I know it's a lot. Like, it was a lot until we figured out what it was. Mm-hmm. You know, once you know the rules of the game, then you know how to play it, you know, and then you just kind of coast through it as you can.
Yeah. And I guarantee you, though, if you have another child that has autism, raising that child will be very different than how you're raising your little girl, because everyone is an individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's you or it's me or even twins, if they have the same diagnosis, how it's going to manifest in that person is going to look a little bit different, because how the brain reacts to things is very different. Which is why I love what I do as an individualized education program coach, IEP coach, is I get to see everybody's differences and get to try to honor those differences in that document and really help them become the best version of themselves as possible. So when you were going through school, you said that you had difficulties, but that you're like, nobody really told you that you had difficulties. So you didn't have an IEP or any kind of 504 or any kind of accommodations?
No, my mother ended up having me go to Catholic school the next year after that teacher said that. My cousins, and then I went through there, Catholic high school, went to college. I mean, I just pushed through it. You know, I just had to work harder than other people.
Right. And I think that's, again, that goes back to that different path, you know, just because your path looked different. Like, I was the kind of person that I spent a lot of hours doing homework. That was not necessarily for any sort of learning disability, but I just always felt I had to spend that much time to get everything that I needed to learn. Not everybody did that, and that's okay.
Yeah. You
know, I'm as successful as my brother who never opened a book. So
yeah, it varies. I mean, I was, you know, I was a C student at best, and then, you know, I hire Ivy League guys. So I don't know what to say. I'm always kind of mystified too. I'm always like, I'm going to be starting to take some courses at MIT this summer. And I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, like one time I was going to MIT before, I was drunk wandering around getting arrested. Like now here I am. Like, I think it once you understand that there's no such thing, like, I don't believe any of that stuff. I always say, well, educated people can make good employees, or they can be good at business owners. It doesn't discriminate. I do find that if I'm hiring somebody for a creative job or something I really need them to excel in, I'm looking for like a C student. The B student, they'll coast. An A student, they're going to overanalyze everything because they're going to want to be straight A, perfect. And a C student might say, hey, you know what? I'll figure it out. And that's usually been my experience.
That's awesome. I love to hear that, because so often I hear parents talk about, oh, you know, my child has to get all A's. I'm like, why? What does that mean? What does an A mean? What does a B mean? What does a C mean? And so many people, again, going back to, you know, yourself and others, like, you look at their grades and they were C or B students. They weren't straight A students, but it's because they have that, they've learned that ability to pivot and, you know, to, okay, well, that didn't work, you know, almost like Edison. Well, that didn't work. Okay, let's try this.
Yeah.
You know, some of the valedictorians in the last 20 years, they didn't know what to do with themselves when they found themselves struggling in college, because they never had to struggle before that.
Yeah.
And they didn't know how to live.
My stepdaughter is 12 and she's a straight A student. If she's getting a B plus, she gets worked up. And she gets a report card. She goes to talk to me. I go, I don't care. How you doing? Are you trying? She goes, yeah. I go, that's all I care about. I go, I don't care if you get straight C's or straight A's. I care less. It doesn't impress me. It won't matter in the big picture of life what you do in sixth grade. What matters is how you treat people and if you give it 100%. If you give it 100%, you'll figure it out in a way. If you're half-assing and getting A's, that's useless to me. I said, I don't want that. And it's hard for her to get that, and because she's so goal-driven and oriented. And it's your end-game oriented. You know what happens when you hit an end game? I was like that. I hit a goal, and when I make this much money, I'm going to be, you know what, you're not happy. There's no such thing as an end game. Life is, it's ongoing. And I think when people are looking at the bottom line, it just doesn't work. That's been my experience. I mean, other people might succeed by driving themselves that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is that end goal. I think it would always be moving down the line, or like you said, you get to that end goal and you're not happy. And then what?
Now what?
You know, you either come up with a new goal or you get stagnant. And so, you know, the fact that you, who had such difficulty in school, is now going to take some classes at MIT. Again, that's a limit that you just busted through. That probably that fifth grade teacher, if you were to see that person today and say, you know what, I'm registered at MIT. They wouldn't think that it was the MIT.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. It's funny. A doctor I knew asked me to take an exam on math. And he said, can you just take an exam? I said, how do you think you do against Ivy League kids? I said, I'd smoke them. He said, how about reading? I said, I can't even, I can barely spell my own name. I said, but if you're giving me numbers, I can do what nobody else can do. And so I took the exam and he said, you know, I'm pretty impressed. He said, you want to take courses? He said, you don't have any pressure. You don't have to enroll. You take one class, you pass, you take another class, you finish it up. We'll say 2 years, you can get, you know, pay what you have to when you get a degree. He said, I'm not that committed, not for finance. I said, if it's philosophy, you know, psychology, I'd love to learn. He's like, no, we're not interested in any of that with you. You're a numbers guy. We want your numbers. I said, all right, give me 5 years. He said, all right, 5 years. I said, all right, I'll do it. So, and I love it. I love the challenge of it. I love the fact that I can show up and prove that people with challenges can easily blow through anything. If it's our thing, you know, everybody has their niche, and anybody who's too well-rounded, they're usually not that great at anything, or if they're great, they're not that unique. That's been my experience. Just when I've hired people, some of the most unique people I've had have been people who've had some struggles, but I see something that they're likable, you know, and there's just something unique. I don't know. And I think life kind of teaches us that as we go is how you got to be an individual. You have to be yourself. And none of us, when we're young, I don't think school teaches that. I think school teaches sheep. I don't think it teaches you how to think. It just teaches you how to think what they want you to think and get to the answer they want you to get. And you know what happens? It makes a bunch of good employees, a bunch of miserable people come out with college loans, they pay taxes, and it's just a cycle of crap. And I don't think it's right for people. I think people are more authentic than that. They don't get a chance.
Yeah, and I'm totally nodding along with you because I completely believe you. But, you know, I don't know if you can see the sign behind me, but I am a teacher. And so
but I'm not saying teacher. I'm saying but the way the system is set up, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. That, you know, there's so many that when they see that I'm a teacher and yet I kind of disagree with the way our education system is running now, it is shocking to them. But I very much agree with what you just said, that it was designed to make assembly workers. And we've not evolved the processes that we're using, and we're still making, and now it's more, oh, you know, you go from this school, you go from primary school, then you go to this school, you go to middle school, then you go to this school, you go to high school, then you go to this school, you go to college. And then what? You know, like there are so many educators that have never experienced in life what they're teaching, but they teach as if the next step for that person is still another school.
But a lot of the teachers don't have a choice. There's a system that's put in place. I mean, this goes so much higher up. But I look at some of the schools around here. And my daughter is not going to any of these schools, but you hear about schools that don't give grades. And I used to think that would be, why would they do that? Ugh, the kids should be competing, and you know, competition drives things. But that's that right mentality. But the truth is, like, if you just embrace who somebody is and they learn their own way, you can have a unique person in society, and probably somebody who can contribute what other people can't contribute.
Right. Yeah. And again, that again is to me, that's that hashtag no limits of, because so often those who are struggling to learn the way that, again, the majority of teachers teach the way that teachers were taught to teach in their undergraduate doesn't reach everybody. And if you're in that minority of that 15 to 20% that learn differently than that, a lot of teachers don't know what to do with you. They don't know how to deal with you. But if we could foster that population, we probably would have an even better society than we have.
Yeah, I mean, I know this. Like, so the woman who owns the school my daughter goes to is called Fuse. Her name's Lauren, and she is amazing. She went to school for, you know, she ended up getting her PhD in neuropsychology, a neuropsychologist. And she just, they learn, they take these kids who go in, they're all different. It's like a mixed bag of nuts. None of them are really fitting into any kind of, you know, any hole. They're like pound square pegs. Before you know it, they're playing together. They're outside and they're doing things with water and they're learning the letters and the numbers. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this little girl went in there, a complete, like, just a very unpolished, just square peg. Now she's like coming home and she's just telling me about her friend. I got my friend so-and-so, my friend so-and-so. And it's amazing to me. Like, she's learning so much and she's learning her own way. I thought, wow, thank God this girl, Lauren, decided to go off the grid and do this. Like, I said to her, what made you do it? And she came and described it really because she just wanted to help these kids that she didn't know how to help as a teacher. And I mean, you know, as a teacher, you really kind of, they force a lot of stuff. And it's nobody's fault. Everybody's trying to do the best they can. I mean, the system's meant. We just haven't really evolved with a lot of stuff. I think certain parts of the world have, but it's hard. I mean, because, you know, do you really change the whole system for 15% or 20% of the kids? You know, that's the flip side of it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. No, and I don't think that you change the system, but you amend the system for those who have that difference. And be okay with, okay, well, there's some kids like you and I mentioned before, you know, that well, I'm not necessarily helping you reach your fullest potential. So I'm going to recommend that you do this instead. You go over to this company or you go over to this person and they can help you more than I can help you. And I think we need to do that in education and, you know, make those charter schools, make those private schools, whatever other schooling is available besides public school, and not be offended in a public school setting that we're not it for everybody.
And yeah.
That, you know, there are better ways. Yeah.
That's hard.
It is difficult.
Because nobody wants to admit that. None of us want to admit that we're inadequate. The only reason I admit it in certain ways that may force my hand is I know when I see an addict, if I'm not going to be able to help them, then they need help because they're going to die. It's deeper than dollars and cents. It's life and death. And I think it's because of the pain, the stakes are so high. I think with the schools, the stakes aren't quite as high. We don't see it. And frankly, I think those stakes lead to kids with addiction. I think part of the reason I love drugs and alcohol were the fact that I got away from being Ryan. I wasn't overwhelmed by life. Because even when I was running a financial business, I felt like I was just ill-equipped for life. I'd be making a fortune. I'd be like, I just can't do this anymore. And I did a job I loved, and I loved my clients. I just couldn't do it. I think there's so much we need to learn.
Yeah, and there is, and maybe you're not familiar with it, but there's the school-to-prison pipeline. And by third grade, they say that if the student doesn't know how to read on grade level, that the likelihood of them ending up in prison increases exponentially.
Really?
And so I do think it is very much connected that if we were, and we are going to pay for it. Like you said, yeah. You're not going to necessarily see it immediately. But if we're not providing the education that these people need that are different learners than that majority of the population, then we can either provide services and supports for them and different ways of learning when they're in schools, which we're already paying for, or they can grow up and go into society and maybe they find themselves in trouble financially and we're helping them that way, or they find themselves, you know, using drugs and we have to help them that way, or, you know, they're filing bankruptcy and we help them out that way. I mean, some way, shape, or form, we're still on the hook. And I say we, I mean, like.
No, I agree with you. I think that's amazing you put it that way. I never would have thought of that. But the truth is we're going to pay now, we're going to pay later. It's a lot cheaper to get them in an education point. Because I will tell you this, I was a menace to society in my 20s. I would say that I probably did hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage in fights and violent stuff. And on top of it, they had paid for me to go to jail, which is 45, 50 grand a year. Then they had paid me to go to treatment, which had to be 40 grand there. Now, don't get me wrong. My mass taxes I pay every month, every year, pay in 1 year what all that costs because they invested in me. They put me in treatment. They put me in all those things. But a lot of people don't go. They go through the spin side, detox street, mental ward, homeless shelter. And yeah, if you could invest, if they could find a way to track the dollars and cents, I think you're absolutely right. It'd be far more cost efficient to teach these people, set up one more school for kids that have some struggles and do it that way. I never heard it put that way. I really like that.
Oh, well, thank you. The school to prison pipeline is not mine, but the rest of that was mine.
The school to prison pipeline, I don't like so much. The rest of it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and I hate to bring it down to dollars and cents because we are dealing with individuals and we are dealing with people. But I think sometimes, you know, you have to have that, I feel that stark reality of one way or another, do you pay for it up front and you prevent some of that stuff from happening, or do you pay for it when it's happening?
Yeah, the scotch issue, the thing people don't realize is you don't pay for it when they're younger, like you just said. I was just thinking the whole time you said that, I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty profound, because the one smart thing I did was I didn't bring a child into a situation where I had a drug problem. And that was just luck. I didn't have a lot of brains, but that was just one thing I was smart enough not to do. Because I remember thinking to myself, I wasn't raised like that. I wasn't raised in a sleazy environment. And I remember thinking, I can't raise a kid. I can't raise a dog. And I'll tell you, but I never thought of it. Like, not only are you supporting these people, but you're supporting their families, the kids, the welfare, there's such a better, you got to change something, because if nothing changes, nothing changes. We have generational welfare people, and there's no dig it. It's not digging them. I mean, if you don't know any better, you don't do better.
Right. Yeah. And if we're not explaining in schools to kids who are able to and ready to listen and learn, which means that we as educators, we as the adults in their worlds, need to help them become ready and able to listen and learn. And what's that look like? It could look different depending on where you are and what the child, you know, is dealing with at home. I mean, there's a lot of factors, but I think we can absolutely find ways to deal with those factors. And like you said, when we're dealing with that student, we're also going to probably help, if we can, improve the family situation. Yeah. And you know, and teach those things about, you don't want to be on generational welfare, because really it's not good for you.
It builds low self-esteem, which perpetuates a drug problem or an alcohol problem. And then you have more kids get in the system, and it's hard. Everybody I know, I always say this, nobody I know, like when I was getting sober, I was on Mass Health and I was on food stamps. They said to me, you're going to have to go on SSDI, disability. And I said, why? I said, well, you have a drug addiction and alcohol. I said, listen, nobody in my family's ever been on SSDI. I'm not going to be the first. Screw you. But if I didn't know that from my family, right, I would have definitely did it, because I was starving. I was broke. But if I went on there, then you can't work. You know, I'm always a big believer in flat tax, 15% across the top. You make Elon Musk, Zuckerberg, all those guys, you can't take stock options. You got to take cash, pay 15%. Anybody who makes less than 50 grand, don't tax them. Let them just work to be working because they feel productive. If you do that, we'll be out of debt. But they don't do those things. You know, right. People on these systems. I mean, I remember if I went off SSDI, I would have never come off, because you can't get a good job right off the bat. So if you work a little, it hurts that so bad.
Right.
It's such a
problem. It is. And they only explain the good things. They don't explain the negative things about it.
Yeah, your life's going to suck. You have no self-esteem. Your kids are going to see that. They're not going to know any better. And all that, like, and people are just trying to better their lives and try to do the best they can for their kids.
Right. Exactly. So, Ryan, we have about 10 or so minutes. So I want to make sure that if people are wanting to reach out to you, and I've been so engrossed in our conversation, I haven't switched my banners down at the bottom. But here is your website. It is crackingthecodewithryanskinner.com, spelled exactly like we spell it in America, with all the weird spellings and whatnot. But how else do they get a hold of you, or what can they expect when they go to your website? And I can pull it up if you would like me to, if that would be
helpful. Well, it's funny. They're rebuilding the website, so I don't even know if it's going to pop up. But they're rebuilding because the site just had a couple of things that weren't user-friendly. The videos weren't flowing real well. So you can always email me at rskinner or Ryan at crackingthecodewithryanskinner.com. I will tell you, what can people expect? It varies. Okay, what do I mean by that? Well, some people can expect they meet with me, they work with me, I coach them, their business grows, we crush it. Other people, they meet with me, I can't help. I'll never take a dollar before I help somebody grow, because I don't need the money, to be honest with you. I'm through the grace of God, my coaching, my financial business does so well that this is more of a passion project for me. This is more of a thing where other people want to grow and be entrepreneurs, and I like to be a part of it. I got that friend of mine's father was on a board. He would help people take ideas public. He helped with Constant Contact and some stuff like that. And he just believed in paying it forward. He's a blessed guy. He's from Ireland. He had tons of success. And I was like, if I'm successful, I'm going to pay it forward. And that's how this all started. I always look at, like, you know, oftentimes people reach out, they have drug addiction. And my answer is, I'm not necessarily the right person, but I'm going to get you in contact with the right people. Somehow you try to make somebody's life better if they cross your path. That's been done to me. I mean, it's not that I'm that unique or that I'm that good of a guy. Frankly, I'm that selfish, and I know how good I feel when I help somebody. And if somebody is, I've been helped. I've had so many people help me. You know, all I'm asked to do is pay it forward. I mean, I'm a guy who should be dead or in prison for a long, long time. And I get up every day. I go to a job I love. I kiss my kid on the head I love. I have a decent relationship with her mom, my soon-to-be ex-wife, which is shocking. I have two parents who get to see me sober and live a productive member of society. That's a gift. Like, I broke these people. And now, you know, I get great friends in my life through being in recovery. So if I can pay any of that forward, it's a huge blessing.
Well, that's wonderful. And I thank you for doing that, because there are so many people who are lost, who don't know what to do with their finances. And that's actually what my husband teaches at high school, is some business classes. And there have been adults that have come into his room because they've been with other students, and they sit and they've listened to him and they've said, why didn't I learn this in high school?
I know, right? Amazing. I'm blessed, but like I teach a financial literacy class at a college around here, and people come in and they don't even understand like basic tax withholdings and stuff. And I'm like, what's you personally? And they make it a couple hundred thousand a year, some of these people. I'm like, how do you not get? But the truth is, it's not taught. Right. The school system's never been changed. I mean,
right. And I think some of it is taught, but at high school, you maybe have a, you know, minimum wage job. And, you know, at that point, all you want is money to just, you know, go hang out with and do the fun things that you want to do. You're not really paying bills and really getting the whole concept. So it's not as meaningful to you is when you're an adult and you've been paying your bills for 5 or 10 or 15 yeah. years, and then you hear it, you're like, oh, I should be doing that, or oh, why didn't I know that before? So I appreciate what you're doing for, you know, and one concept that I struggle teaching people is don't spend promised money. And you want to elaborate on that?
Before I went broke in my 20s, obviously, because that's what drugs do to you. But this time around, I listened to a guy who I looked up to. He said, don't buy anything you can't buy twice in cash. I built a house I knew I could pay off in 5 years. I saved like a fiend. Like, I mean, I have nice stuff, don't get me wrong, but I won't buy it until you buy it twice in cash. And because I never want to be poor again. I want to be rich, but I'll never be poor again, God willing.
Yeah. Yeah. I so often I hear people say, you know, well, I know that this money is going to come in, so I'm going to go ahead and buy this thing now. Nope. You wait until that money comes in, and then you pay all your bills. And then if you have leftover, then you can look at buying this thing that you want, that you don't need, but you want. And that's another whole conversation, is needs versus wants. And mercy, do we have a lot of wants that we believe are needs in today's society? My own little soapbox there.
I love it. I love it. My daughter watches a movie called Lorax. You ever hear that?
Yes.
Great movie, because it's a yeah. need. The guy makes the things that's need. Everybody's buying this thing to wear different ways, a scarf, whatever. And they just kill yeah. the trees and these little bears and go to live somewhere else. And yep. it's such a good lesson for kids, because they don't realize how – I'm pretty capitalistic, but not like that. Like, I think that you got to value certain things. And it's right. scary. But, yeah, people buy everything.
And it is tough to think of consequences. Like we talked about, you know, like, oh, you want to go on SSDI. I mean, they're going to tell you the good things about it. They're not going to tell you the negative side of things, you know, and what it's going to do to you. And oftentimes we do that in business. You know, we think, oh, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do this, or even in our personal lives. But we don't think about the further steps, the ripples that can create in other ways and in other parts. So, Ryan, I appreciate you being on today. And I just want to make sure that before we wrap up, that I give you opportunity. If there was something you wanted to share today that we didn't get opportunity to share, we've still got several minutes to go. If you have some more words of wisdom for us, or other advice, or anything else that you want to say right now.
No, it was a privilege being on. I think it's funny. The coaching business was such a passionate project. And so much of what comes in is people we introduce to other people, or people that I coach at no cost. Because, I mean, if somebody calls me, they're making $5,000 a year, I'm not going to charge them, right? I mean, if somebody's making 7 figures, I have to charge them, because it's going to take that much more work. Right. It's unbelievable, like, how it pays off. You know, so much of it's just a sounding board or referring people out. But somehow it's like the transmission line between people is just – it's pretty profound. This was awesome. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. It's been my pleasure to have you as a guest. And so make sure, as I said at the beginning, that you like and subscribe to this channel so that you can hear other awesome guests as the hashtag No Limits continues, hopefully for years to come. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.